Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. And welcome to our podcast of The Greatest Version of You. As you guys know, for those that have been following, this is our opportunity to share stories and highlight some experiences, knowledge, obviously a lot of inspiration from people all across the world. And I can't think of anyone better to express that and for you guys to hear from today than my friend, Mr. Chad Hymas. Chad, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you. For those of you that are just learning about Chad, I mean, not only is he a best-selling author, a world record holder as far as athlete, and internationally recognized speaker, and we're excited that we get to reconnect today.
The pleasure is mine. This is going to be a good opportunity. You and I just met just shortly, I mean, through mutual friends, right?
We did. In fact, Danette is, you guys are related, is that correct?
So Danette is my wife's cousin, and she happened to be there. I didn't know that she was going to be there. You hosted John Maxwell in Salt Lake City, and I attended that event with a friend. It was actually on my birthday, and so she kind of took me there as a kind of a birthday getaway. And I loved John and followed him, and so it was a good time to get away. And then you hosted that and also spoke at that event, so it was my first time hearing you speak. And so it's just good to kind of hear your peers speak, and I was really impressed with what you shared that day, and impressed with your tenacity and unrelenting, just your drive to get John into Salt Lake City. I thought that was impressive. So very well done.
I definitely can be non-negotiable when I have to be.
That's great. Nothing wrong with that.
Yes. And I was so glad that you were there. I actually have heard you speak before at one of the companies I was working for, Kiani, a few years ago.
And
you spoke at one of the events, and I got a chance to read your book, and I kind of get to know you from afar.
Cool. Good deal. I'm glad our paths finally crossed, and this is a great opportunity to elaborate on that.
Me too. So tell us what you're up to these days, as far as speaking and motivation. And obviously your story is inspirational, and people from all across the world are hearing that. But tell us kind of what you're up to these days.
I think that the way that we're getting our message across is evolving. And so we're up to staying on the cutting edge of how messages are delivered. Obviously, there is still great needs for meetings and people to gather their people together. And that's being done. But we're doing a lot of webinars, a lot of Zoom chats, a lot of coaching one-on-one, which was not the way that it was 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. And so while the travel still is extensive, and today I find myself in Raleigh, and that's great. We find that the businesses, there are several avenue streams, or we call them pillars in the office, to deliver a message or to get a message across. And so we have been really trying to tap into those different revenue streams to deliver the message that we're delivering, which is several messages on several fronts. On the family front, Shondell and I have been married just already 26 years. We have the boys that are a little bit older. They were born before my accident. And then after the accident, we adopted two children, one from Guatemala. Gracie is a sophomore in high school. And Caleb, we've had him now 3 years this month, and he is from Ethiopia, just turned 11.
So wow.
That's our dynamic, right? That's the dynamic.
Not the easiest dynamic. Congratulations, though. That's, family is a beautiful thing, and it's probably one of the most challenging things as well.
For sure, but it works out. It does work out for us. It works pretty good.
I'm so glad. So tell me your favorite message these days. I mean, I've seen you on YouTube and giving all kinds of background speeches, of course, of your history and your experience, but speaking on family and even, values as far as integrity and commitment. Kind of tell me these days where your heart is and what you're focusing on.
I'm really finding myself, those messages are all clear. They're values. And I love staying true to values and true principles. I like speaking true principles that work for people. What I'm really finding myself and finding a great need to speak upon today, and what people are asking for, is for people to stay positive. It seems like, and I don't know if it's just the aurora in the air. I don't know if it's what people are seeing on TV. I don't know if it's the bullying in schools. I don't know what it is, but people seem to be easily downtrodden, or to find themselves in a slump, or not realizing their potential. So I am, rather than me answering, hey, what do I like to speak on? It's what are the needs that people need to hear? What are we hearing when we ask people, okay, what's the theme of your event? What's your people's needs? What are their fears? What are their victories? And And statistically, over the last 24 months, let's just throw that number out there, because I think it's been even a little longer than that. It's people are really experiencing a lot of fear, and they are not being as productive because of that. It's not because they can't be productive. It's just that they're not being productive. So we're really, it goes right along with your theme and people tapping into, you know, their life vision and unseen potential. So I'm finding a greater need to study more, to memorize more, to find passion, to deliver a message based on that principle or that theme right there, which is right up my alley, because I was asked to do the same thing when I lost all four of my limbs. I think it's a great niche for me to be involved in.
Yeah. So give our listeners a little bit of background. I mean, I've read your book and I'm familiar, but I'd love for them to hear a little bit of your background of the accident and how this journey all started for you.
I think it's important to state that I never thought I'd be on a podcast or never wanted to be a speaker. My dream's always been to be just a rancher, and I love the outdoors. I have a lot in common with your husband, Becky. I mean, I can't get enough of being in the outdoors and being, you know, being in a stream and fly fishing or out scoping down or glassing down a hill, see what critters are on the side hill and just watching how they move. And my dream's always been to be a guide. And so Shondell and I moved our home from Salt Lake City out to a place called Rush Valley, which is an hour west of Salt Lake City, and bought some ground there. And we started raising elk. And long story short, 6 years into that, building that dream, I was injured out one night while feeding the animals when a bale of hay rolled over backwards from the tractor that I was driving and landed on my head. And that broke all seven vertebrae in my neck and severed 95% of my spinal cord. The doctors were able to repair. So I lived through that. I was found 48 minutes later. And the doctors repaired my broken bones, but there's no cure for the spinal cord. There's no stitches. There's no glue. There's no duct tape for that. And so I did lose all four limbs. While I do have movement in my shoulders and have a little bit of feeling in the bicep area, the fingers and the hands are gone. And so that's where my new life was to begin. And so that's been 19 and a half years, I guess, 19 and a half years since that happened. And ever since that happened, this came about through different channels and different introductions, but I have been traveling the world and in 19 years, I think I've shared a message of some sort on 89 countries or in 89 countries on all seven continents. And I'm not sharing that to brag. I'm just saying that I think there's a message right there that sometimes we have these dreams and these visions, and mine was to be on a farm, and 89 countries is a lot bigger than and a lot better than the acreage that I was planning on farming. I think sometimes we think too small. We think inside of a little box area, and I think it's critical that we don't even think outside the box, that we throw the box out the window and more opportunities and windows present themselves.
I absolutely agree.
So that's what's taking place. Yeah. So that's one of the messages you shared that night when I listened to you talk. I was just reading into your message. It was just soaking it in because it was highlighting on so many of the life experiences that I've had. So anyway, that's what we're doing today. That's the short of it.
I love all of that. And definitely what you're seeing on the pulse of the community, I'm seeing with my own friends, family, and community as well. I think there's this level of anxiety that things have been thrown at people so quickly, whether it's through the world we live in, the time we live in, the social media, I mean, access to knowledge, information. And I think there's this level of stress that people are seeing from this comparison game that I think is at a higher level than we've ever seen before. And
absolutely,
I think your perspective, as I'm sure you never would have prayed for that perspective in the form that it came in, but at the same time, the blessing that it is to be able to see the world on a different, again, a different perspective. And I think that's what we're lacking today is being able to give people the tools, the knowledge, the experience to be able to gain that perspective and kind of put those fears at rest a little faster.
I don't think you could say it any better than that. I do think that because of all the things that you mentioned prior, that people have everything at their fingertips. And there's this feeling out there that, hey, if I don't get the scholarship that my older brother got, or if I don't meet mom and dad's standards, you know, or if I don't fit in with this crowd, or if I don't match up these expectations, that life is over.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've been seeing that. So
I think, yeah, it's imperative that we keep that message going.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had one of our podcasts, I actually had a chance when John Maxwell was here to interview him on the podcast as well. And he was, I was talking about the awareness, even at our age. I'm in my mid-40s and being able to look at so many people around us that still feel lost, or maybe all of a sudden their life is not where they thought it was going to be, and the anxiety and the fears and even sometimes the bad choices that come out of those fears have started to overwhelm them. And John very quickly kind of put things back in place for me, and kind of recognizing that, hey, not everybody's has the tools or even has the support system or even has the same experiences. So this idea of getting that knowledge out there and just giving the stories just like yours, Chad, I mean, which is a powerful story for people to be able to not just relate to hard times, but also see something so great out of just being able to pivot in life. And I'm sure that's something you're speaking on as well.
Yeah, I don't think people have to be numb in all four limbs to understand what paralysis feels like. I think it's today, it's coming in many, many forms, whether it's financially trying to make ends meet, or again, not meeting up to standards, or comparison, as you mentioned. Those are all forms of paralysis. And I think that people that don't change themselves or don't look at themselves for what they bring to the world and the gifts that they are, that they truly are robbing themselves and robbing all of us of the gift they have to give. I think we start comparing ourselves to the people and say, hey, if I only had this, maybe I could do something. Or if I only had my arms, maybe I could really be a better father or grandfather. Reality, that might be true. But when I focus on what I still have going for me, I'm much more productive, much more happy. And that light shines brighter than if I were probably to have legs or have hands in the first place. My wife has taught me that. So it seems to hold true for me.
That's amazing. I think I found in my own life, and definitely people around us, I think most of us, and traveling the world, you see this, most people want the same things. They want more joy. They want more purpose. They want to be loved. They want to be appreciated. And I think where most people are feeling that anxiety is just not understanding their purpose and not even knowing how to find those things. And what we've been trying to teach is, for me personally, I have found that my purpose is usually found in my strengths. And most of my anxiety and fear can be minimalized if I recognize that my job is really to manage my weaknesses and then focus on my strengths. And it's amazing how life and God and the universe and whoever you feel is your higher authority kind of draws that into your life by following more of those strengths. And when I say manage weaknesses, obviously we all have tendencies or addictions or, you know, weaknesses that plague us. And it's really hard. The idea of overcoming those, I think, gives people a false perspective. I think most of the time we're just managing those things in our lives and trying to keep our focus on those strengths to find that purpose.
I think you're right. I think when you see me, my weakness, of, if you want to even call it that, of not being able to be mobile has become my greatest strength. So now I tend to try and embrace a weakness because I can see it for maybe it might be something different than what I'm perceiving. And I think when we use perspective, which is something that John Maxwell tapped into when he talked that night, we tap into a different perspective or put on a different pair of bifocals or glasses and look at our weaknesses from a different angle, a different perspective. We then begin to embrace them and look at them as an opportunity rather than see them as a weakness or as a downtrodden or a downfall. And we tend to seek out because they make us stronger, they make us better, and they give us credibility to be able to use when teaching others, or even if it's not said, it gives you credibility in your bank account to be able to use at a future, you know, when you're trying to share or teach or raise posterity, or, you know, be an example or an influencer in the lives of other people. Those weaknesses give you credibility.
So what do you think your weakness actually is? I mean, obviously not physically. I think mentally you're...
Glad you're asking me.
Right?
This has been very sensitive for me the last couple of months. One of the things that I'm really struggling with now is being home. We, as I mentioned earlier, we have the four children. Two are biological. They're a little older. and they're out of the house. There's two that are younger that are adopted. It's about a 7-year gap. And Shondella's asked me to be home with these kids that are younger because they've never had a father figure in their life prior to us adopting them. And I've been so used to traveling the last 19 years mm-hmm. and being gone for 270 nights. And again, I'm saying this with all due humility. That's nothing to brag about. But for me, being gone has been my drug of choice. I know that when I got married, I said something along the lines of for better or for worse, or, but nobody plans on your spouse having to help you get dressed.
Yeah.
Nobody plans on their spouse showering you. I know it sounds like fun. It's not fun. I don't know how to say it any better than that. And so for me, it's been nice. It's been easy. A hotel room has been my scapegoat.
It's become your normal.
Yeah, become my normal for sure. And so we've tried this new venture with the ranch and being home, and we've tried it since last November. And I've really struggled, and it hasn't been until maybe just the middle part of December and Christmas vacation that I'm relearning things all over again. And so I think there's a couple of points to make there. One is that it's important that we relearn, and I am going through that right now, just relearning how to date and be around Shondell a lot more mm-hmm. often, and really learning how to be a father. If I'm going to go out and teach people, and I don't do it in my own home, what have I gained? I've gained absolutely nothing, and so I really need to be able to be there for these two younger children before I go out and share with an audience of 10, 5, or 5,000, whatever that number might be. It doesn't matter. I need to be that person in my home. And then secondly, I think you embrace the moment, and this is a moment of change. And as you mentioned, life, it does change constantly. And for those of us that don't change with changing circumstances or requests from a spouse or demands upon us, life's going to change without us, and it will probably be more painful. And I don't like going through that kind of pain.
Yeah.
And so, I need to be willing to change. So that's kind of what you want to call that a weakness. That's probably what I'm dealing with right now in my life.
Well, I love the honesty. And since we're on that, I'll share. I mean, I feel like at this point in my life, that relearning is a huge part of it. And I don't know if there's something that happens at different ages statistically, but you definitely start to recognize, what you wanted in your lifestyle at 20 is definitely not what you want at 30, and it's definitely not what you want at 40. And I think that's a life lesson of just getting comfortable with relearning. And my husband and I are complete opposites. I have a feeling you and your wife are pretty close too. But he grew up he was born and raised in the same house, never moved. Definitely stability was his security blanket. And I, by the time I graduated high school, lived in 19 different homes in 6 different states, and was very used to relearning and starting over and adjusting and having to be comfortable with myself, because there were definitely times other people were not comfortable with me, not knowing who I was and showing up in new places. Sure. So it's amazing how those lessons stay with you. But through the last, we've been here in Utah for the last 15 years, and the idea of, again, kind of transitioning careers and new phases in life, it's not comfortable. I don't like it. I like it, but I don't like it.
You're good at it though. What's your focus right now? I know this podcast, but I'm kind of switching the gears for a little bit. So what's your focus? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you doing?
We've been out doing a lot of speaking engagements as well. A lot of coaching involvement too. But for me, it really is, if I spent the rest of my life creating a platform that I could just share other people's stories and help people reach that perspective a lot faster, I think that would definitely be my light.
Wow. How cool is that? It's a great calling. It's great to fulfill a calling like that.
Yeah. And I have a hard time not being around people. I definitely have moments that I want to retreat the same as everybody else, but my joy is sharing things with other people. So I absolutely love finding a way to do that. And so for me, the podcast and speaking and these, interviews are a way for me to be able to experience those things.
your drug of choice, just like mine. People, it's the drug of choice. And I don't think that's an illegal drug. I think it's a pretty good drug.
Very true. Very true. I was actually listening to an interview the other day, and you know, in talking about that comparison thing that is so prevalent right now, and especially among, in my life, I watch this amongst my kids, and you know, they're wanting things and recognizing things sooner than I ever did in life. And I'm sure part of that has to do with the internet and social media and just, again, access to information. I was joking with them the other day, like when I wanted to look something up, I was hoping we had all the encyclopedias in our house, or I could, you know, go to the library and actually find the book I needed. And research was a whole different experience back then. And
you had to work for it.
You really did. And your sphere of influence was so small. I mean, it was based off of literally who you surrounded yourself with on a physical demographic basis. And that is so different today. But we were talking about the judgment aspect, and you know, it always cracks me up when somebody starts the sentence with, "I'm not judging you," but I mean, because that's pretty much what you're doing when you start that sentence.
Yeah, it turns out right there. You have to say it anymore right there.
Right? That's like, exactly, you know, right. The Honest Abe car salesman that has to advertise how honest he is. Yeah. It's kind of a
double standard sentence, yes, coming up right before it comes out, right?
Yes, putting it right out there. But there's something that became, I mean, as far as clarity, you know, somebody mentioned how we judge ourselves based off of intention, and we judge others based off of action. And that just stayed with me. I think that's a really powerful statement to recognize. We give ourselves the ability to read between the lines as far as our intentions and mistakes, but sometimes we're not able to do that with everybody around us. And I'm sure part of your you know, speaking and things that you've been experienced has been kind of on moving past things and letting go of past experiences and hurts and forgiveness. And I'd love to just chat with you about that.
So I love what you just said. I'm trying to make sure I memorize this right and write it down. We judge others off of their actions, and we judge us, ourselves, off of our intentions.
Yes.
I wonder what would happen if we were to switch that role around a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Our own actions, right? I'm just saying that we wouldn't be saying, "I don't mean to judge you," but right, we wouldn't be saying that at all.
We wouldn't. It wouldn't even be part of our vocabulary.
No, it would be out of the vocabulary for sure.
Yeah. And even switching it. I mean, imagine if we just made it a even playing field. I mean, if we based ourselves off of action and them off of action, or them off of intention and us off of intention, it would.
Absolutely.
It would equalize.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would. Yeah, they would decipher themselves out.
Yeah, but I have seen in my experience, especially the past few years, in so many interviews, and some of the happiest people I've ever met are those that know how to forgive and let go of things and see the best in others.
Yeah, and what you're saying right now you're tapping into something that's hard for me. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'm just saying it's one thing to forgive. It's a total separate thing to let go, because that comes back to haunt you. And I think, I don't know that forgiveness and letting go have to go hand in hand. I think there's a fine line there, but you're absolutely right. If you don't let go, then it comes back to haunt you. And so I don't know where that fine line is, you do have to let go. Joe Calloway wrote a book called Letting Go, and it's powerful. It talks to this very, very subject. And I think that those two probably do go hand in hand, but there still is a fine line. You look at some of the most successful people in the world. I look at Nelson Mandela. I look at Princess Diana, Mother Teresa is another one. People that didn't have access to social media, people that created large platforms, created movements. How's that? They created movements, and they did. They had to let go while still protecting their value system, right? Mm-hmm. So Nelson was asked, he still protected his value system, still kept himself at a distance. If those that are listening are Christian people, yes, held true to values, forgave, but still kept himself at a distance to those that we're talking bad of the temples and the synagogues. So I think that's powerful.
It is. And I think what I have discovered just through enough research and probably my own failures as well, I think the difference with forgiveness is you know you've forgiven when you no longer resent, meaning you don't have a heart of resentment towards that action or that person. Like, you can be in a good space when you're around them, or in a good space when you look back on a situation. It doesn't bring harmful feelings into your heart or your head. Where I think letting go actually occurs is when you can look back at a situation and actually be grateful that it happened, and recognizing again how that changed your path, or it changed your experiences, or it changed your heart or perspective. I think that difference between no longer resenting and then getting to a place where you can actually be grateful for that experience.
I think you're right. Absolutely. Spot on. I'm finding that relative in my life right now.
So tell me what you're currently relearning. I mean, I know you're talking about family and those kind of experiences, which I feel like that's always evolving. You know, this idea when people say, how do I become the perfect parent? I'm like, you find out and let me know. I mean, and you figure one thing out with one child and it's something completely different with the next child. I used to get so frustrated with my parents when they'd, you know, they had different rules for each one of us and different punishments for each one of us. And it's not until you have your own children that you realize, oh, well, they're not motivated by the same things and they don't learn the same way and they don't have the same perspective and strengths and weaknesses. And you start to apply that. But outside of that, what do you feel like you're relearning?
So we're the same age. Do you have any kids that are married off?
Yeah. So my oldest is married.
So how did you do that? Because I'm just saying, my oldest just got married too. And I have a hard time sharing.
Yeah.
I'm being very, I have a very, so your oldest, male or female?
It's a girl. And it was much harder for my husband. That was a rough experience for him.
And I don't know if it's because I don't resent the family or resent her. He couldn't have married somebody better. I love her. She's phenomenal. But, you know, they've chosen to live out here. They're going to school as well. And when they come out here on weekends from Logan, and they drive back to be at their house, I find myself driving by and I can't stop and say hi anymore. And I'll park right there. Not their driveway, but it's like I'm stalking and I'm not stalking stop, but I'm just thinking that I wish I could, because he's been by my side. He was 3 when I became paralyzed. So I'm relearning how to be a good dad and be supportive of his new role as a husband and his dreams, realizing that I can't have him in my life the way that I always have. Mm-hmm. And then there becomes, and I'm finding myself a little bit envious of his time because it now has to be shared with other people and other parties and other, I mean, Christmas, as great as Christmas is, and I love it, I didn't enjoy it as much this year. I struggled. It's different because I felt empty. I felt like I was missing the kid that, you know, even though he was gone for a couple of years in Australia and he was still mine. Mm-hmm. Now he's not mine.
Yeah.
You know, his heart's got to go somewhere else. So when you ask me, what am I relearning? I'm really trying hard to be happy and share that and show that joy when my heart is not there. I want it to be there, but it's not. It's not there. I'm jealous. I'm envious. We used to do it. We did everything together. I didn't miss any of their basketball games. I coached them all the way up through basketball and high school and college ball as well. And just
it's so hard.
Finding myself. Oh my gosh.
It is.
And again, I want to reiterate, love this gal. I couldn't have picked a better prize for him. I mean, it has nothing to do with that. Love. He couldn't have married into a greater family, but now it's that sharing aspect and they're going through the same thing. I'm sure. They are.
Yeah. And it's an adjustment on both sides. The hard part is you feel like you start to get good at this parenting thing and then they turn into adults and you realize, I've prepared them their whole lives for this metamorphosis for them. Nobody prepared me for how to handle that experience, whether it was, you know, college or being an adult or getting married. It's definitely an extreme shift in your family dynamic, in your relationship with that child. You know, it's like, even when you're still at moments financially helping them with school or you know, whatever it is, you still don't have the same influence on that child. And it's, as a parent, it's a struggle.
It is. It's a struggle knowing that if I called every day, it's going to look like dad's,
Yes.
dad. I can't call every day. I used to talk to him every day and he'd call me every day. And so there's this gap. Yet, I will say this though, it's the little things that make the biggest difference. And so a few days ago when I got a little text, I'll just, hey dad, just want to thank you for all you've done for me in my life. Couldn't have asked for a better father. Thank you for all that you show us from your wheelchair. Never do see the wheelchair anyway. It's been an honor being your son. That text right there saved my heart. Not just that day. I'm going to reread that. I'll be reading that every day for the rest of my life.
I get
And
it.
I'll be reminding him that he sent that to me, right? So that,
Yes.
I'm probably not going to be number one ever again, but I'll be number three or four. And I just want to stay in the top five. I got to stay in the top five somewhere.
Yeah, but now
So anyway.
you get to be the more of the example. Like they get to look to you as a way to pattern themselves, their heart, their lives, and that becomes scary too sometimes. That whole idea of kids, doing what you do instead of what you tell them to do is, I mean, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good.
I love the point you brought up in our call today where, and I just kind of heard it this way, Becky, forgive me if I miss say it or mispronounce it, but we should all be constantly learning. And the way that I heard that is the day that we stop learning should probably be the day that we no longer exist. I think it should, there's, I, again, John said this in his talk in a different way when somebody asked him what's the best book you've written? And you remember what his response was. He said, it's the one that I'm writing now. Because if I'm not writing something better now that I'm learning right now, then what good am I doing to the world? So he, after writing 87 books, is still saying to himself, there's still so much more for me to learn. So I wrote down in my notes when John was speaking that for everything that we do know, there's so much more that we don't. And tomorrow is going to be a better day. That's what I wrote down. So
And a
I
lot of
thought that
that
was
is,
powerful.
yeah, and that my favorite book, it's funny because people ask me just because of our relationship, like, what's your favorite book? And it changes depending on what I'm experiencing in my life. I mean, the first book I ever picked up of his was The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And I was at a place where I was struggling to have people follow me. There's different levels of leadership where, it's not about a position or a rank or an advancement or a title that makes you a leader. It's when people are seeking you out and, you become the leader that you would want to follow, let alone ask other people to follow. And I was struggling with that. And so it meant so much to me. But at different seasons of my life, where I'm at right now, my favorite book of his is Intentional Living. It's waking up every day with an intention and knowing where you're going and understanding your purpose and your cause. And it's outside of money and outside of experiences. It really is about, challenging ourselves and looking forward to those things. So again, as we grow older, hopefully we're growing better, but that's not always the case. There's definitely moments that I was telling somebody, this idea that you get older and things get easier, someone needs to take out a billboard and put that myth to rest because
For sure. Absolutely, for sure.
that is not the case. You just hopefully get
That is not,
better, yes, at solving problems and handling those things. But yeah, there's definitely days that I want to be a 20-year-old again.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? That day will come. I think that day will come.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So for you personally, what are you hoping in the next 5 years, 10 years?
We got a lot to accomplish. I mean, so we're working on our 12th book. We are doing a lot more tours. Again, when I say tours, we're bringing people out here. I've gotta listen to Shondell and be more home based. So I'm looking a lot of what Russell Brunson has done. He did not want to travel. I have wanted to travel, and so I have been fortunate to be able to do that. Now it's a gear shift where we got to bring people out to the lodge that we just finished and build a leadership type of curriculum. That curriculum is in place, but build a following where people are sending their people out from Salt Lake or they're coming in from around the world and spending 2 or 3 days out here going through a course that involves indoor and outdoor team building activities and inside curriculum where it's not like something they can experience in a hotel ballroom. or even in their training rooms. We want them to experience something completely different. So we're evolving my love of the outdoors and the horses and the cattle and the branding and the elk and all that we have out here and trying to culminate and marinate those two visions. So what I've been doing for the last 19 years and the dream, that's what's on the horizon. That's what we're moving towards.
That's beautiful. And you can tell you're bringing all your happy places together in one spot.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do. You're right. That's what we're trying to do.
So tell me who you're inviting out. Who are you seeing as far as responding to that invitation?
So a lot of the C-suite executives that I've coached over the last 19 years, decision makers, people that are leading or influencing others that are stewards, I would call some supervisors. We are hosting a leadership retreat for a Salt Lake City company where they're bringing out their top 12, and they'll come out and spend 2 days with us. And so those are fun. Those are fun weekends because we're spending 8 to 10 hours together a day having the food that I enjoy, which is Dutch oven. I mean, having a chef cook that and really being in an atmosphere that is not in a hotel ballroom setup. It's a completely different atmosphere. And well, so that all adds to the experience.
You know, John and I are coming out, but for everybody else listening, tell them how they can find more information on that and how they can be a part of it.
If they just Google my name, which is Chad Hymas with a Y, Hymas, if they Google it, they'll be taken to some of the things we've talked about today. To find more information on the seminars and things we're doing out at the ranch, they can look up Royal Creek Ranches, ES at the end, or just contact the contact page, the info page, and I'll take them to my office and they can get more information there. But there's a lot that's there. The next leadership seminar is January 25th. That's a Saturday, weekend Saturday. So that's sold out, but that we will be doing more in the future. So.
Well, we can't wait to follow along. And for everybody that's listening, you guys can follow him on social media. And obviously, he's got a lot of great videos on YouTube as well and kind of stay in the know. And Chad, thank you for joining us today and taking this time.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for hosting me. Looking forward to our paths connecting again soon.
Me too. And again, we can't wait to follow you and cheer for you. And we wish you all the happiness and success that life has to offer.
Thanks so much, Becky.
Thanks, Chad. We'll talk to you soon. And you guys, thanks for joining us on The Greatest Version of You. And we'll see you next time on the next podcast. Take care.